this, in fact, may be how the existence period helps create, or at least partly stimulates, the condition of honest independence, inasmuch as when you're in it, you're visible as you are, though not necessarily very noticeable to yourself or others. And yet you maintain reason enough and courage enough in a time of waning urgency to go toward where your interests lie, as though it mattered that you get there.
Writer Richard Ford. He'll be back in just a moment to talk about and to read more from his new novel, Independence Day. Welcome to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Partial support for Soundings comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. At the center of Richard Ford's new novel, Independence Day, stands an apparently unremarkable 44-year-old white heterosexual male, a realtor, a father, and an ex-husband. It's the summer of 1988, and in the voice of Frank Bascom, the sports writer of Richard Ford's earlier novel, we hear an intelligent and compassionate observer of contemporary American life. Speaking from the standpoint of what he calls the existence period, Frank Bascom talks about his family, his profession and clients, his high hopes for the 4th of July weekend he and his son are about to spend together. Publishers Weekly says that Frank Bascom penetrates the working commercial life of modern America with skill and empathy, coming as close as possible to the great American novel for our times. With another excerpt from Independence Day, here is Richard Ford.
Our summer swoon notwithstanding, there's a new sense of a wild world being just beyond our perimeter. A sad fact, of course, about adult life is that you see the very things you'll never adapt to coming toward you on the horizon. You see them as the problems they are. You worry like hell about them. You make provisions, take precautions, fashion adjustments. You tell yourself you'll have to change your way of doing things, only you don't. You can't. Somehow it's already too late, and maybe it's even worse than that. Maybe the thing you see coming from far away is not the real thing, the thing that scares you, but its aftermath. And what you feared will happen has already taken place. This is similar in spirit to the realization that all the great new advances of medical science will have no benefit for us at all, though we cheer them on, hope a vaccine might be ready in time, think things could still get better, only it's too late there too. And in that very way, our life gets over before we know it. We miss it. And like the poet said, the ways we miss our lives, a life.
Let's talk about Frank Bascom, Richard Ford. What happens to Frank in the course of this, two or three days that you write about in Independence Day?
Well, it's a weekend in 1988, the 4th of July weekend, when he takes his son, Paul, to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. And his kids kind of got off the rails a little bit by stealing a package of condoms from a pharmacy in Connecticut where he lives with his mother, and gotten in trouble with the police and been roughed up by the police. And Frank feels has, in some ways, begun to sort of go off the rails. And so he feels he needs, Frank does, to sort of get more closely into his son's life and to try to talk to his son about where he thinks he's going wrong and what he might do to get better. And so that's really what it's chiefly about. But it's also about selling real estate, and it's about Frank's love life, and it's about how Frank passes out of or passes into another phase of what he calls the existence period.
Let's pause on that for a moment. He's headed toward the permanent period. You intimate that at the end of the book. What is the existence period?
Well, the existence period is that time of life after all the big crises have passed. If you think there are such things as, say, a middle life crisis, what lies beyond is the existence period, which I think of as, if you credit the whole thing at all, crises or middle life or any of it, I think it's a good time in life. It's a time when you're not attaching to every possible crisis and trauma that goes on, and when you're more or less happy and you're doing your job, it is only happy. Its only downside is that it's paid for a little bit by isolation. That in order to keep yourself free of
of crisis, you isolate a little bit.
Well, again, the name of the book is Independence Day, and this is what your man Frank Bascom is struggling with.
He
wants to connect on the one side, he wants to be separate on the other side.
Right.
Why is it that you have selected real estate, realty, as a kind of organizing, metaphor, principle, thematic kind of thing that runs through this book? I reacted to it as follows. This narrator is going to engage us, and he's a real estate agent. Come on, nothing could be more boring or mundane. And yet I congratulate you. At the end of the book, you think to yourself, wait a minute, this is quintessential. This whole idea of finding a place and organizing one space, all of that. And yet you don't give it to us in the language of the self-help movement or psychobabble. Let's talk about that.
I'm not much for that. For me, as a guy who writes about people, the most important thing that I can do in writing about them is find something that they do for a living. People on the earth and people on the page become palpable to me when I know what they do for a living.
Sports writing, real estate.
Selling real estate. I mean, it just comes out of my background that my father, I think, thought highly of himself because he had a job through the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And I think that's one of the things that always said to me, this is one of the things that make people anchored in a way to their lives. And so I had to find something for Frank to do it. And I thought real estate, not because it was a metaphor, because I'm not much on metaphors, except that they somehow come out of the sort of pulpy matter of the story itself. I just wanted him to have a job. And the job I wanted him to have was one that I thought had a language that was funny, and that a language that in some way would allow him and his normal goings-on, which is to say, who is to say Frank, to sort of talk about all of America. It's through real estate and selling real estate that the book tries to address the widest possible intelligence about America.
Well, you've got all these wonderful characters that you organize them around scenes. We've got the Markhams, we've got the McLeods,
right.
We have one of Frank's colleagues, a young black woman who was murdered, as a matter of fact, in the course of the book. I kept waiting to find out, are we going to solve this mystery? Should I accuse you here of just spinning threads that you're going to leave the reader to untangle for himself or herself? We don't really come to a conclusion about that, do we?
No, we don't. Not about this woman who's murdered. I thought long and hard as the guy who wrote that passage if I wanted to, or if I purposefully didn't want to knit that together at the end. And I felt I had good reason not to. I felt that there are some things that happen in our lives which simply do not resolve at the end. Enough resolves at the end of this book to make me feel like maybe I'm overzealous anyway.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, this is something, I mean, I could have, invented some way for that to, dovetail into the end of the book. But in fact, that's what happens in deaths that we read about, even deaths of loved ones, that they come along sort of at the periphery of our lives, and then they go out of existence without ever being resolved.
Well, you have that death, and you have the death of a Mormon tourist, somebody from Utah, at a motel. You leave it up in the air. I take it not to make your readers uncomfortable, but because you think that this is a genuine take on the sort of uncertainty, the unpredictability of what's going on in your narrator's life.
I mean, I don't know, maybe because I live in a city, I'm very aware of how much just simple violence there is sort of floating around free form in American life.
Yeah, now this is part of Paul Bascom's problem. I mean, his dad fears for this in this kid's life.
Yeah, I think that's the natural parent's fear. I'm not a parent, but I do know what parents fear most. They fear that something awful is going to happen to my kid, and for good reason. I mean, you focus all your affection and love and care and a great deal of yourself in some child, and you want that child to prosper.
The book, Richard Ford, is Independence Day. Let's talk about the women in the life of Frank Bascom.
Well, one thing I wasn't involved in, I wasn't trying to stake out my claim on what I think of gender issues in this world.
Uh-huh.
I was just trying to think of how it could be in Frank's life that he could forge some affectionate connection with someone else.
Uh-huh. Let's pause on this for a moment. I mean, on the one hand, I've read the reviews of your book, which say that this is essentially a good and decent man.
That's what I think.
Who wants, okay, fair enough. Hearing that from the writer is important. On the other side, I can argue with you and say that this man is really a monster. He is nothing
Get out of here.
Now, wait, he's nothing but ego. He's all inward, and he fails to commit. He doesn't really want to reach beyond himself. How about that?
I just reject it out of hand.
Well, explain it to me.
Well, I'm not sure that I have to explain it to you. I mean, here's a man who spends 450 pages trying to talk to you. Uh-huh. So automatically, I think he's not, and he's not just telling you about himself. He's telling you about real estate. He's telling you about what interests you and him. He's calculating uh-huh. everything to in some ways edify and amuse you. And it's not just about himself, even though it comes from his agency as narrator. So I don't think it's just about ego.
Richard Ford, your novel again is Independence Day. One of the themes that runs through this book, one of the important sort of subtext, is the sacredness, the sanctity of a place or a
right.
space that people create. Tell me how you unravel this thread in this book. Why is it important to you?
Well, I think everybody has a notion that they're. Is some good place for them to be in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a hometown or if it's a state that you take and make your own, if you're a transient like I've been, living maybe go far away to Montana as I've done. But the real trick is how you make the place accommodate you and how you accommodate the place. There is this notion, which is it comes out of, at least from Thoreau, it's sort of a romantic notion, which says that places have characters. And places, and Thoreau says in Walden, that they even have voices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're quiet, you can hear those voices. But my experience is very different from that. For me, places are quite inert. They're kind of like picture postcards. What you have to do is not expect the place to speak to you with their silent, romantic voices, but that you go to them and make them conform to what you want them to be.
You make me think of two things about Henry Thoreau. Number one, he went to Walden on July the 4th.
Yes, he did.
In the 1840s. And the other thing is he's got this wonderful...
Pure coincidence.
Well, and it's a very happy one, I would say. The other line that comes to mind is that image of the farmer pushing the farmhouse down the road of life and being burdened by place and real
right.
estate.
Right.
Is that part of Frank's makeup?
Yes.
Frank
it
Bascom?
Indeed. It is indeed. I mean, places and your sense of place is portable. Your sense of how you fit into a place has much more to do with you
uh-huh.
than it does with the place, as some passage in my book says, giving you sanction. You have to authorize what you do. You have to go where you can make sense of things. This is in some ways why I'm sometimes impatient with the Southern notion of regionalism, because because it traps you in a place. It makes you be a place which in fact may not, you may not be able to make accommodate you. I am not sure what chokes me up, either the place's familiarity or its rigid reluctance to act familiar. It is another useful theme and exercise of the existence period and a patent lesson of the realty profession to cease sanctifying places, houses, beaches, hometowns, a street corner where you once kissed a girl, a parade ground where you marched in line, a courthouse where you secured a divorce on a cloudy day in July, but where there is now no sign of you, no mention in the air's breath that you were there or that you were ever importantly you or that you even were. We may feel they ought to, should confer something, sanction maybe, because of events that transpired there once, light a warming fire to animate us when we're well nigh inanimate and sunk, but they don't. Places never cooperate by revering you back when you need it. In fact, they almost always let you down, as the Markhams found out in Vermont and now in New Jersey. Best just to swallow back your tear, get accustomed to the minor sentimentals, and shove off to whatever's next, not whatever was. Place means nothing.
Richard Ford, let's talk about the question, the theme, this large word, independence.
Right.
How does this work in your book? I mean, you are spinning it out of the consciousness of Frank Bascom, and he's writing about it with regard to himself and many other people. How about it?
Well, that probably was one of the things that led me to write the book, was kind of looking at the word independence, because it had turned up in my notebooks often. for some reason, I mean, I don't want to say it's magic, but I wasn't quite aware of how much it had turned up until I noticed it reading over my notebooks. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, this is occurring to me in my own vocabulary, in my own notes a lot. So it must be that there's something interesting here. What I think in the book I was dealing with was the fact that Americans usually associate independence with some romantic notion of splendid isolation. And I thought that that was a price that one paid for being independent, but that finally what independence has to be useful for is to free you even from isolation so that you can be, fully armed, fully empowered to go toward others, to connect with other people.
That's a fair assessment or appraisal of description of what Frank Bascom, your narrator, goes through.
Right.
He's struggling with how much to give of himself, how many doors to open, how vulnerable he should make himself with the women in his life, with everybody in his life.
True. And I thought that that was the most obvious way that you would go if you were Frank at age 44, a heterosexual mm-hmm. man with family, that you would go toward some woman that you might love, or in his case, toward his own son, even in fact, toward his own ex-wife, who in the process of sort of ending their relationship once and for all, do it through the agency of affection,
mm-hmm.
not rather, you know, as independence and divorce is often implicated, that when you get divorced, you separate. In a sense, by becoming fully divorced from each other, they kind of join again in a mutual understanding.
Should I say that this book, Richard Ford, is a self-help manual at the highest level?
I wish you wouldn't.
All right. Why should I not call it that?
Because it's a novel, and it means to please, and it means to amuse, and it means to divert. Maybe it means to edify at some level, but but only if you're in the mood, you know. I mean, I wouldn't dare address anybody with the notion of self-help, because in order to address someone that way, you have to know more about the individual than I can know about whoever would read my book. I'm just trying to talk about, through Frank and with Frank, the most important things I know. If you read it and you think they're important and you think that they come to you through language that's diverting and lively, well then I've succeeded.
Richard Ford, your novel is Independence Day. Tell me about the word synchronicity and continuity. How do you use them in this book?
Well, synchronicity is actually just something that I think is funny because it's this kind of hippie expression that people are always trying to assign to how life works. Uh-huh. On my icebox at home, and you can tell how old I am that I say icebox. On my fridge at home.
That's right. That's the way my mom would have described it.
That's how the academics all say, because they've all spent too much time in England. On my refrigerator at home, I have this little saying that I cut out of, I don't know, some magazine someplace. It said, the snake of synchronicity is always with us, which as though it was this sinuous thing that winds around through our lives. That's just in some ways, I suppose, a joke in the book. Continuity, though, is another matter.
Finding one's way in the world and being happy with the path that you're following.
That's right. Continuity, in a sense, is a notion which in the book is juxtaposed with the idea of contingency. That for Frank, any sense that you have that life is continuous and that one thing feeds into or lies naturally into another must cope with the notion that actually life is more contingent than it is anything.
Well, contingency in this book, in this man's vocabulary, is almost like the word sin. I mean, it's something unnatural or unholy. It is not good for the way he wants to define himself and connect with other people.
This is Frank.
That's right.
Well, I don't know that it's...
That too strong?
I think that's too strong. I think that's the nature of human condition that he thinks contingency. There's a wonderful line from George Will, who is not of my political persuasion, but who's still from time to time a smart guy, a line in an essay that he wrote, in which he says, the nature of history is contingency. And when I read that, I thought, well, that's kind of right, isn't it? And mm-hmm. all the concepts that we use to sort of lay over our lives and make them seem continuous, make mm-hmm. them seem synchronous, are in fact ways in which we face contingency.
Well, history is a big word in this book.
That
After
is.
All, it is called Independence Day. It is Frank's favorite non-religious holiday.
That's right.
And he's finding himself not only in his own life, but in the life of his country.
That's right. That's right. And you know, it's making yourself accommodate the nature of the life that you live in. It's rather than expecting it to accommodate you, expecting, for instance, that if you move into a community, that the community is going to do much for you. If you move into a community, you're going to have to accommodate yourself to it, because mm-hmm. people just live in communities in an almost haphazard way. There's nothing mystical, there's nothing religious about communities in the United States. People come together and they move apart, and they come together and they move apart. If you're going to move in with them, you're going to have to do the accommodating, which is why the Markhams come to live where they live at the end of the book.
Richard Ford, your book is Independence Day. We hear the voice of Frank Bascom throughout this novel. He's a pretty serious guy, yet he also has a sense of humor. How do you balance the act between the work of the novel, that is to say, the serious reflection on his life, and then these sort of pop culture zingers that he delivers from time to time?
Well, I actually think that that's part of the work of the novel, too. It's the way in which, and I hate to keep using this word, but it does come up naturally, at least in our conversation, it's the way in which you accommodate the serious things of your life. That you take an interest in what's funny about them. You make them seem lighter than perhaps another person might seem. And you take an interest in how funny language is, particularly in the language of real estate. I mean, do you know what a PUD is?
Planned unit development.
Well, it's that, too.
Uh-huh. He's got some great one-liners about his ex's new spouse, Charlie Odell?
Charlie Odell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's just Frank sort of getting off on the Yale connection, I guess, and trying to have some fun with the way in which we identify ourselves with, you know, where we went to college and all
sure.
that foolishness. If you went to Michigan State, you wouldn't feel that way.
Well, now you're revealing your prejudices here, your own and your narrator's. There's some great exchanges between this guy and his kid when they're telling each other jokes. And the whole question of what's serious and what's ironic, what do I believe, what do I reject, that goes in a very serious way to humor.
It does. Because for a lot of people, it is only by having access to humor that we can concede the other person's point of view.
Right.
And that is, in truth, what Paul does. Paul concedes his father's point of view and concedes what his father wants to do for him by making fun of him back. And that really is how they communicate.
Richard, do these characters have a future? Frank originated, as I understand it, in The Sports Writer. He comes through the existence period, moves toward the permanent period here in this book, Independence Day. Where does he head next?
Well, he goes back in the closet where he was when I got him to write this book, Independence Day. I don't have any future for these characters. If in 10 years some spirit moves me, as the spirit did move me in 1992 to try it again, I might. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I'm trying to write a trilogy. I think I've left them all at a good place in this book. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've left them at a better place than I left Frank in The Sports Writer. So if it never came again, I'd be happy just to have written this. I mean, I think Frank is like you are.
Mm-hmm.
I think Frank is like Anne is.
Thanks, I think.
I wouldn't mean it,
but in
the most hopeful way.
Fair enough.
I mean, there's a line at the end of The Sports Writer in which Frank says that he cannot imagine that anybody else in the world would have an experience much different from his.
Uh-huh.
So I think that in being a realtor and in being an ex-spouse and being a father, and I hesitate to say every man, because I really don't believe in that.
You mean the every man with a capital
yeah,
E.
Yeah, I don't believe in that. I just think that a person could read about Frank and think to himself or herself, I've got sympathy for this guy.
Right.
I know something that this man is doing. I hear what he speaks to be important.
Richard Ford is the author of Independence Day, a new novel available from Knopf. You're listening to Soundings, a radio magazine about books and ideas from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. With another excerpt now from Independence Day, here again is Richard Ford.
And yet, do I sense, as I sit here, a melancholy? The same scent of loss I sniffed 3 nights ago at Sally's and almost shed a tear over because I'd once merely been near there in a prior epoch of life and was in the neighborhood again, feeling unsanctioned by the place. And so shouldn't I feel it even more here because my stay was longer, because I loved here, buried a son nearby, lost a fine permanent life here, lived on until I couldn't stand it another minute, and now find it changed into the Chaim Yankowitz sitter, as indifferent to me as a gumdrop. Indeed, it's worth asking again. Is there any cause to think a place, any place, with its plaster and joists, its trees and plantings, and its putative essence, ever shelters some spirit ghost of us as proof of its significance in ours? No, not one bit. Only other humans do that, and then only under special circumstances, which is a lesson of the existence period worth holding on to. We just have to be smart enough to quit asking places for what they can't provide and begin to invent other options, the way Joe Markham has, at least temporarily, and my son Paul may be doing now, as gestures of God-required, but not God-assured, independence. The truth is, and this may be my faith in progress talking, my old Hoving Road house looks more like a funeral home now than it looks like my house or a house where any past of mine took place. And this odd feeling I have is of having passed on, not in the bad way, to a recognition that ghosts ascribed to places where you once were only confuse matters with their intractable lack of corroborating substance. I frankly think that if I sat here in my car 5 more minutes staring out at my old house like a visitant to an oracle's flame, I'd find that what felt like melancholy was just a prelude to bursting out laughing and needlessly freezing a small, sweet piece of my heart I'd be better off to keep than lose.
Writer Richard Ford. His new novel is Independence Day. You're listening to Soundings from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. Richard Ford's other books include Rock Springs, a collection of stories, as well as 4 previous novels. Partial support for this program comes from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. I'll be back in just a moment with information about where to write for an audio cassette of this program. You're listening to Soundings from the National Humanities Center. Audio tapes of this program are available for $10 postpaid. Our address is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Our zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 790. That's $10, program number 790. Our address again is Soundings, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Next week on Soundings, Consolidating Freedom and the Role of Civil Societies in Global Culture. Join me for a report about an international conference of scholars recently convened by the National Humanities Center in Costa Rica. Until next week's show, thanks for listening to Soundings. Our theme music is by Jeff Perry. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.